listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
In 2015, a meta-analysis of 80 studies analyzing bullying involvement rates for 12 to 18-year-old students reported a mean prevalence rate of 35% for traditional bullying involvement and 15% for cyberbullying. This information is both about bullying others and being bullied, but even more important, only 36% of the people 12 to 18 years old reported the bullying, so that 64% of the people who were bullied didn't even report it. We talk about bullying in childhood, yet in truth, bullying occurs during childhood and it can continue into the adult lives of many people. We're talking today about bullying, its consequences, and three things you can do to neutralize those consequences. Welcome to Full Power Living, where we're helping the world to realize and work with the importance, power, and mastery of human emotions. We welcome your questions and comments on our chats on blogtalkradio.com/FPL and on emotionalpro.com. My guest today is Kim Knight. She is the director of the Art of Health and Science of Well-Being based in Auckland, New Zealand, and is talking to us from New Zealand. Kim works internationally with clients, teaching them how to recover from chronic illness without medication and how to maintain optimal health. She's a senior Mickle therapist and Mickle therapy trainer in Australasia, and offers courses and counseling worldwide. You can find her on the web at kimknighthealth.com. That's K-I-M-K-N-I-G-H-T health.com. Kim is with us today to talk about a topic that's very dear to her heart, bullying. So Kim Knight, welcome to Full Power Living.
Hi, Eileen.
It's great to talk to you all the way there in New Zealand. You know, as I reported in our opening, a lot of people when their children are bullying, and I think we're paying more attention to this behavior than we did, but that statistic about 64% of children not reporting the bullying means that they didn't get help with their reaction to the bullying. And I want to start off by asking you, what effect does it really have on people? Why do we give so much importance to bullying?
Well, I think the interesting thing is we don't give enough importance to bullying, and we need to be giving more importance. And it is becoming, you know, a bigger topic in the mainstream, you know, in the media, but still there's a lot that goes on behind closed doors. And I think one of the problems is that people do not realize they're being bullied. They actually don't know what's happening. And so, you know, until somebody teaches them actually that behavior is not acceptable, then they don't know to do something different. And they also have to learn, well, how to deal with it, how to stop it.
Well, that's an interesting statement. What do you mean people don't realize they're being bullied? Because we haven't identified what activities are involved in bullying or what?
Yeah, well, I can give two answers to that question. The first thing is that when children are growing up, they don't have the intellectual capacity to understand the difference between what is healthy or unhealthy behavior or what is right or wrong. They know it intuitively and innately, but they can't work it out with their mind. And so, for example, they may grow up in a family where they're being hit physically, or whether they're being treated badly mentally and emotionally. So they're being humiliated, they're being, you know, if there are harsh words, people are being mean to them, they're being torn down emotionally. And they get used to it, and they just think that's normal because in their family it's normal. And then they grow up into adult life, and that has been their experience. And so they don't actually know the difference between healthy and unhealthy behavior. So to give an example, I grew up in a family where I was treated a little bit meanly by my mother, and I didn't really know any different at the time. And she had a lot of stress, there were a lot of reasons why she behaved the way she did, but that doesn't necessarily make it acceptable. But for me, it was just normal to not be treated with love and kindness. And then I found myself many years later in a relationship where I was not being treated well by my partner, and it was what would be called emotional and mental abuse, but I didn't know it. And so one minute he would be really, really nice to me, and the next minute he'd be really, really nasty, but my mind wouldn't be able to make sense of it. My gut and my heart knew that it didn't feel right, but my head was very, very confused. So it's interesting how there is literally like a confusion set up in the brain over what is right behavior, what is acceptable behavior, and what is unacceptable behavior. And the way I found my way out of that situation was that I was in a library one day and I picked a book off the bookshelf. It just stood out to me, and I picked it off the bookshelf, and I opened it up, and the chapter heading said Jekyll and Hiding. And I just couldn't believe it, because I used to say to myself, it's like living with Jekyll and Hyde, living with this person. And I read the book, I took the book out, and the actual title of the book was Men Who Hate Women and Women Who Love Them. And by the way, that doesn't mean it's always men doing it, but that was, obviously very relevant for me. And I read this book, and it was like the person was telling my life story, and it was like, oh my goodness, this is absolutely everything that's happening to me. And so I became aware that actually to be treated like that was not okay. It was not acceptable, and it was a form of bullying. But I didn't know it until somebody else told me, because I grew up in an environment where I wasn't treated well emotionally.
Well, I grew up in a family that was very abusive, and lots of things went on, abusive in many areas. And one of the ways that I understood it was I noticed one day that something happened, and somebody I was with said, oh, I wouldn't put up with that for an instant. And I realized that in my head, I had said, oh, so that's what's happening. I wonder what I need to do to deal with that. And it was so striking that, like you said, it was normal for me. So it was just, what am I going to do? Like, I'm trying to figure out a recipe for cooking or something, instead of saying to myself, that's not okay. I don't have to be here. So thank you for clarifying that. Yeah.
I find it very fascinating now that I look back to see how much we can put up with and how much unfair treatment we can tolerate and think it's acceptable when actually it's not.
Yes. So a child has been bullied, usually gets bullied more than once. And so then if the emotions that are stirred by that bullying aren't resolved, the person ends up carrying the energy and the protective behavior patterns that go along with being bullied into adult life. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
So then bullying continues into your adult life and you don't even realize it's bullying. What are some of the ways that you've seen that bullying occurs in adults' lives?
Yes, well, what will happen is it'll either happen at work or it'll happen in family life. It can even happen with friends. So, for example, at work, and because it's the law of attraction at work, which is how we attract ourselves to situations and people, that's going on sort of in an unseen way. We'll always attract the right people or situations that match our energy vibration.
Right.
And so, for example, somebody could go to a job and they think it's their ideal job, but then they suddenly find that their boss is treating them unfairly and maybe giving them a lot of work, maybe being rude to them, not treating them well, or maybe that's happening with a colleague. I remember once, for example, working with a client who was a manager at a company, and she had gone out with one of her colleagues and then they'd split up. And she was a higher ranking than him. He reported to her. And he started being really aggressive and refusing to do work that she was asking him to do. And she just didn't know how to deal with that. And then she found her way to me. And so I taught her how to put up clear boundaries, how to, you know, to create clear boundaries and have her needs met. And that also included, by the way, going to the HR department, which she hadn't even thought of doing, because we just don't seem to come up with the resolutions when we don't know what to do to these people. And part of the reason is that we get triggered into the old fight, flight, freeze response that was originally triggered as a child when we weren't treated well. So often people go blank and they don't know what to do. So that's an example of what can happen at work.
Well, I know you mentioned that we're often repeating patterns that happened in the first 7 years of our lives. And as you and I have talked personally in the past, the first 7 years of life are when people are learning about emotions. And it is said that if you don't resolve the emotions, if they're negative to your life, in those, you know, when you're a child, then you literally just repeat the same emotional patterns over and over again. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. It's a complete repeat, 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 repeat until we recognize the pattern and we change it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so on a physiological level, Kim, can you trace what happens when a person is bullied, when their emotional brain gets trounced, as it were?
Yes, and it's really, really common with the people that I'm working with. So if we could go forward or we could go backwards, say we go backwards and we start where somebody, you know, usually is when they turn up on my doorstep, and they may be really chronically ill or chronically unhappy. And what we find is they're not looking after themselves. They're not making themselves a priority. And they're allowing, for example, in the topic of bullying, they're allowing people to walk all over them, you know, treat them like a doormat, not standing up for themselves, not speaking their truth, not communicating how they honestly feel. And as a result of all that behavior, all those patterns of behavior, all the emotions over the mistreatment are just staying stuck inside. They're just getting repressed, repressed, repressed. And that actually ends up with, for example, depression, which is the depressing of emotions, or it ends up with symptoms of illness, which is a furtherance of this long-term depressing of emotions. And so what has happened is there's both the emotional suppression, but there's also the behavioral habit and habits, both in terms of thinking and behavior and also lifestyle, where people are just not able to stand up for themselves or look after themselves or make themselves their first priority. And so they end up just exhausted and sick. So we have to track back, and we have to learn how to clear that emotional backlog and how to change behaviors and how to stop unfair treatment.
Well, I know that you work with a lot, you help people to heal a lot of illnesses and syndromes that are very, very difficult, such as fibromyalgia. It strikes me that autoimmune diseases like fibromyalgia, as I understand it is, would be tied in with this. We're not nice to ourselves, so our bodies aren't healthy. Do those connect like that?
Yes, because everything is connected, and it's like there's a boundary within ourselves and a boundary with other people. So we have to learn how to create clear boundaries with other people's behavior, but we also have to learn how to behave well towards ourselves.
Well, it's certainly important. Well, I was interested that you talk about this and have diagrams in adult life, because the fear and pain of being bullied hasn't been released. A person can actually perpetuate the issue by becoming a lifelong victim or a perpetrator or even a rescuer. Talk about how that works, will you?
Well, I think it's called the Karpman diagram.
Right.
I haven't looked at it for a while, but the rescuer, the victim, and the rescuer, victim, perpetrator, as you just said.
Right.
And what happens is, and it all goes back to these early years in childhood where ultimately at a fundamental level, because of how we were treated and how we felt about how we were treated, how that made us feel, we have very, very low self-worth and we just don't feel worthy of being loved. And even more at a deeper level, perhaps even feel worthy of being alive. So out of that, we can go in one of three, or mostly one of two directions. We can either feel completely and utterly helpless and hopeless and disempowered, and that is what I refer to as more a victim consciousness or disempowered consciousness, where we just feel completely powerless inside, which is, you know, the people that can't stand up for themselves, don't know how to speak their truth or create these clear boundaries. Or we will go in another direction and become very overly self-protective. It's like this big, thick armor where we're not going to let anybody treat us that way again. And that is the person that becomes the bully. But the interesting thing is, at a fundamental level, deep down, there's still that deep sense of lack of self-worth. It's
right.
Still the same fundamental issue. And then the rescuer is potentially not really so connected from the point of view that the rescuer tries to step in and be the mediator between, say, for example, a victim and a perpetrator. So in a home environment, you know, you might have the father is the victim, the mother is the perpetrator, and then the child is trying to be the rescuer and keep the peace.
Right. And as I grew up, I tried to be the rescuer, because I didn't want other people to go through the pain that I had gone through. So I tried to save other people. And fortunately, eventually I learned that each one of us needs to save ourselves because we have our own lessons to learn. But initially I was trying to save everybody so they wouldn't have to suffer.
Yes.
So even though we don't really realize that we're being abused, you say that our emotional brain always knows the truth of our experiences. So here we are at the same time unaware that we're being abused, and our emotional brain knows the truth that we're not being properly loved or treated well. How do those two go together?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll give you an example in a minute, but just to give a bit of theory, we have three brains, and science has proven we have three brains. That has been more recent research, but the interesting thing is the ancient cultures, the Eastern cultures, have been teaching this for thousands of years, and now science is catching up and showing this scientifically. So the definition of a brain is a neural network, or a network of neurons with an intelligent purpose. So we have three neural networks in our body, and most people are only aware of the one in their head, which is the thinking, analyzing, rationalizing mind. And that is its job, because each of these three brains has a different job. And actually, each brain has three core functions. So in total, there are nine core functions within these three brains. So the head brain is about rationalizing, making meaning, understanding, and also coming up with creative solutions. The heart brain is about emotions and feeling and what we call a relational effect, and also our values. That is what the heart is about, and we know that. And then the gut is about our survival and our safety. And if we feel safe, we will have the ability to take action and to be motivated and to be able to move forward in life. And it's also the center of our core identity. So what has to happen is we need all three brains to be on the same page when we're acting in life. But what happens is there's like a real mix-up that happens between these three brains. And it's almost like, well, it's not almost like, what happens is the mind starts to take over the role of the heart and the gut. It starts to compensate and overcompensate because the gut is frozen with fear often, and the heart is very confused with all the emotions that are going on, and so the mind tries to take over in Miggle therapy, we call this the head brain and the body intelligence, or the head intelligence and the body intelligence. And so with every single person that I work with, what we find is that the mind learns to rationalize away what the heart and the gut is trying to tell the person. And the problem is that the heart and the gut don't speak words. We learn to speak words with our head brain, but our heart and our gut don't speak words. They speak in gut feelings and sensations. And people literally disconnect at the neck and they stop listening to what's going on in their heart and their gut, and they override with the mind and rationalize, which actually a rationalization is often a rational lie. And it's still trying to protect, the role of that rationalization is to protect the person from feeling any more of these horrible, uncomfortable feelings, but it doesn't work. So then what happens is there's this real confusion set up in the brain between what we call the emotional brain center, which is actually in the brain, and the thinking brain center in the brain, which is more the cognitive analytical functioning as opposed to the limbic system. And so there's this real confusion. And what happens is that when children are growing up, the people that are around them that are the adults, to the child, and you know this, that to the child, they're like a god. And so I'll give you an example. I was going to give another example as well. But I remember when I had a flatmate once and his six-year-old daughter was having breakfast. Now, this isn't an example of bullying, but it's an example of how we learn to override our gut brain. Mm-hmm. She was having breakfast and she was full. So her sensory system, her gut system, literally her digestive system said, I've had enough. And that was a very intelligent piece of information coming from her body, which she recognized or recognized in her head. And her father stood there and said, eat up everything on your plate. And she said, but I'm full. He said, eat your everything on your plate. Now that was and she had to eat it. Now that was her being trained and conditioned into not listening to her gut brain.
Hmm. That's really sad. Yes, I came from the plate cleaning generation also. Wow.
Yeah.
So it's time for our first break, Kim. And when we come back, I want to talk about why someone, especially somebody who may have been bullied themselves and hated it, ends up bullying others. And you'll find out the answer to that from Kim next on Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
Everybody feels anger. But if you don't learn to deal with it, anger can mess up your life. It can cause you relationship problems, difficulties on the job, or create health problems. If you want a way to understand and work with anger that's simple yet so powerful it helps you to put an end to the specific angers that are messing up your life, then you'll want to get a copy of a mini course I've created for you entitled Reduce Anger Now. With it, I want you to be able to figure out what's stimulating the anger you feel and have an easy way to change that anger so you can dramatically reduce the anger in your life. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, longtime psychotherapist, coach, and anger expert. I've helped thousands of people to master anger, and I want you to begin to become an anger master in your life. Order Reduce Anger Now at the store, www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, we're talking today about bullying. My guest is Kim Knight, Director of the Art and Science of Well-Being, which conducts online courses and does healing around the world. Next week, we change pace when I talk with my friend and fellow professional speaker, Gloria Dunn, about her latest book entitled Revivement, Having a Life After Making a Living. Many people are living longer and they're feeling better as they grow older. than their own parents did. And Gloria is addressing what we can do to remain vital and enjoy our years following retirement. So join me on Thursday, February 2nd at 9 a.m. Pacific time for my visit with Gloria Dunn as we discuss revivement. So we've got a lot of wonderful shows scheduled for you. So go to our homepage at emotionalpro.com and click subscribe. If you'd like to subscribe to our broadcasts on iTunes, click the iTunes button. And remember, you can also listen on the archives. So today I'm talking with health expert and healer Kim Knight. And she's talking to us from New Zealand. And in New Zealand, you're known as the Kiwi Health Detective. And before we get back to our serious questioning, Kim, what Kiwi Health Detective do? What makes you a health detective?
Well, as you know, a detective solves mysteries. And so what I do is I help people solve the mystery of why they're either chronically ill or chronically unhappy. And I do that in my first 90-minute session. And we very, very clearly identify what is the problem that is, you know, what is the cause for the problem that is turning up in your life. And usually people have gone to multiple specialists and experts, and, you know, mainly in the mainstream system perhaps, and they're just not getting an answer. And I've just worked out a way of really working out in a very quick way what is the real fundamental root cause of the problem.
Mm. Very wonderful. And what actually, you said that you had experiences with your mother. Is that what brought you to your interest in bullying?
Yes, well, I didn't go directly to the bullying topic, if you like, when I started working as a practitioner. I really started working with people with chronic health conditions. But then what happened was, with working for the 11 years now and working with hundreds of people, I started to see common recurring themes. And one of the biggest common recurring themes is this theme of bullying.
Ah. Well, you know, as I was familiarizing myself with your work, I realized that it's I never paid a huge amount of attention to it, maybe because I was bullied as a kid, but I realized that it really can play a huge role in society. I know, for example, that it plays a part in abusive families. You become an abusive partner or an abusive parent. But let me get back to the question that I was looking at before the break, which is a lot of people who bully as adults were bullied as children. And why do they do that? They know how bad it feels.
Because we don't know any different. And the patterns are so deeply ingrained. And you know, like children, we just soak up everything from our environment, and it's just how we behave. So, for example, my mother always used to speak to me very abruptly and harshly, and sometimes meanly and unkindly. But she didn't realize she was doing it. I felt what it felt like to be talked to like that, and it wasn't pleasant. And I always said to myself, I'm never going to be like that. And then one day, like many years later, I was talking to a cleaner. I had a cleaner, you know, who was helping me in the house. And I thought I was just speaking to her quite normally. And she said to me, "You're a slave driver." And I was like, "What?" And you know, it has been pointed out to me on more than one occasion that I am quite direct and quite abrupt sometimes in my communication. And yet I have a huge heart and I can be really kind and compassionate and gentle. But it's really interesting how these patterns, they are so deep and so unconscious. And so we have to become aware of them and then we can work on them. So obviously this is something that I've been working on. But even so, interestingly enough, literally last week, I was interviewing a colleague of mine, and I was editing it afterwards,
And I was listening to my tone of voice, and I may be even doing it right now for all I know, but I was listening to my tone of voice as I was editing the interview, and I thought, oh my goodness, that wasn't like rude, but it was like that could be more gentle. And yet when I was actually speaking it at the time, I didn't realize I was coming across the way I was coming across. So really what it comes down to, in a nutshell, your question, you know, the answer to your question is, it's unawareness. And we're not aware of what we're not aware of. And even though we can want to be more aware and think we're aware, we still have this level of unawareness about ourselves.
So we can spend a lot of, it's kind of like a lifelong project to be aware of yourself. To just take this a little further, in your materials...
I'm smiling as you say that, because it's just so true. It's a lifelong project.
Yes. Well, in your materials, you also talk about the fact that people bully for two major reasons. They want to have control, and also bullying can help them avoid their own issues or pain or hurt or abuse that they had. Will you say something about that?
Well, just to clarify, can you repeat the question again?
Sure. In your materials, you mentioned that people bully for a couple of reasons. One is that they want to have control, and the other is it provides a way of avoiding their own issues or pain or hurt or abuse.
Right. Yes. So bullying other people is a way of controlling other people. And really what it comes down to ultimately is that we're trying to control our feelings. And we're trying to control things so that we don't have to experience feeling bad. Because when we were a child and we felt emotionally upset and hurt or even devastated, we decided that we didn't want to feel that way anymore. So we set up these patterns to prevent us from experiencing that again. And so one pattern will be suppressing emotions, but another pattern might be, well, if I'm just going to protect myself to the level that I will just control everything around me. Some people control their environment by having an absolutely totally immaculate, pristine environment all the time. That is a form of actually really controlling our feelings, because if my environment is totally pristine, then I feel in control inside. Other people control people in order to feel safe. So really, actually, it also comes back to safety. It comes back to emotional and physical safety. It's a very, very fundamental psychological, physiological reason why people behave and do many of the things that they do and you know, how they live their whole life. We forget that we are an organism that is trying to stay alive, because if we're not alive, we're dead.
Right. And so the other side of that is that when people get bullied, they often become passive or still. And that's a movement to be safe also, is it not?
Yeah, well, that's the equivalent of the, you know, the animal lying down and pretending it's dead, you know, in the animal
uh-huh.
world.
Yeah. Well, on the show last week, I talked with Raphael Kushner. He was talking about resistance to emotions, and he said that when we're in resistance, when we're holding on to an emotion, we can't think clearly, that we have to release the emotion for our brains to work. And I was thinking about that in terms of bullying. Is perhaps one of the reasons the victim becomes passive also is because they can't think of what else to do.
Yeah, well, very much. It's very, very common to go into what I call a brain freeze situation, or a blanking out in the mind, where and this is because this stress sympathetic nervous system response has kicked in, and we've actually gone into the freeze response, and we just can't think straight. And that is because this ultimate reptilian brain survival system has been switched on. But actually, we're caught in the freeze response, and so we don't know what to think or what to say. And we've also, because we've trained ourselves not to feel our feelings, we're not aware of that either necessarily completely consciously, although ultimately, you know, the main emotion there is fear.
Yes. And another point that you make, which I find very interesting and I want you to explore a bit for us, is that when our power is knocked out, which is the main thing that happens in bullying, we just lose our power. The person who is being victimized starts to no longer trust themselves.
Yes, well, trust is a really, really interesting topic. It's one of another of my pet topics, if you like, is that what happens in childhood, for example, is that say people are treating us unfairly, we're being bullied, we're being abused, etc. We have this confusion going on in the brain over what is right treatment, what is wrong, and we start to believe the people outside of us that what they're saying is right, and therefore the feelings that we have inside of us, the intuition, the gut feelings, how it feels in our heart, we think that that must be wrong. And so, first of all, we start to lose trust in the people around us. And that leads us also to start to stop trusting ourselves innately. And then that goes even bigger and we stop trusting life. So I always think that there are three levels of trust, which is trust of ourselves, trust of other people, and trust of life. And all that trust gets eroded on every level. Especially if we're talking about bullying as we are today. And so we have to learn to retrust ourselves, which literally means we have to start reconnecting with the heart brain and the gut brain. And we have to start rereading and re-recognizing the inner sensations that our body is sending us about what is right or wrong for us. And we have to start listening to those sensations and trusting them and acting upon them, rather than the mind coming in and overriding the whole time and say, well, I can't say that and I couldn't possibly say that and I couldn't possibly stick up for myself. We have to learn how to recognize and observe those thoughts but not buy into them anymore, and to learn what's right for us.
So another thing that I would put in here, Kim, is many years ago, I learned about the 7 building blocks of self-esteem from Lazarus at Concept Synergy. And 2 of them are trust and listening to your inner voices. And if you don't do those, that's part of knocking out your self-esteem as well. So just in terms of body experience, abuse really, we really feel abuse in our gut, which is our solar plexus, which is our power center. Yes?
Well, that's one of the places. I mean, we feel it literally in every cell. The solar plexus is the power center, and it's also the center of that gut brain. And the gut brain is about survival and safety. And its role is to monitor, do I feel safe in my environment? And if we don't, which it will instinctually know, then it will send us feedback, which is, you know, fear, for example, would be a form of feedback.
So now if we hold on to if we've been bullied and we hold the feelings inside, we can make ourselves incredibly ill to the point of just not functioning. And so I want to talk about what needs to happen to release all of that. And one thing that you talk about is recognize, which you call it recognize. What is that process?
So there's 2 questions there, and I'm not very good at holding 2 questions in my mind at the same time. So shall I start with the recognize?
Yes.
So it's just in the word. It's just something that I observe that we have this word recognize, but if we break it up, it's recognize. And the role of the thinking mind is to cognize, which means to make meaning. As I was saying, that this prime function of the head brain, the thinking brain, is to cognize, make meaning, understand, rationalize, analyze. That is the job of the head brain. And what is that? One of the main roles of this thinking brain is actually to recognize emotions. In other words, to recognize when the emotional brain, which is another center in the brain, is sending emotional feedback. And that emotional feedback is actually being generated in the body because our organs are intimately connected with different emotions. So, for example, anger comes from the liver or is associated with the liver, and worry is associated with the spleen, and fear is associated with the kidneys. And so those organs are literally affected by different emotions. So we have to learn how to recognize or recognize the emotional feedback which is coming from our body up into our head. So that's the recognized part.
Thank you. And so the other question that I was asking is, what kinds of things need to happen to release the negative illness-making effects of bullying?
Well, there are two things, and it's what I call the surface and the deep. And they're both necessary. Just because one is called surface and one is called deep doesn't mean that one is better than the other. They're actually two approaches, and I find that both are needed. So what I call a surface level, which is more a current day, what's going on in my life today, because again, as we said before, everything gets repeated. We just repeat the past. We may not realize it initially, but actually everything is a repeat of the past until we change it. We have to learn how to behave differently. So if somebody is bullying us, we have to learn how to stop that behavior. So for example, recently I was working with a client whose partner, lovely, lovely man, but because of his past, he had a lot of hurt which had not been resolved, which was coming out as anger, which he was then dumping on her. And she had been putting up with this for years since they'd been together, not knowing, because of course in her childhood she had a similar experience, so she didn't know that actually there was something different that she could do and that she could actually stand up for herself and not put up and tolerate with that behavior anymore. So when we worked together, I taught her how to do that. And then because he was receptive, he was able to see, oh, gosh, you know, I'm playing a part in this and I need to look at myself too. So we have to do things at a very, very practical level in terms of creating these clear boundaries so that the body doesn't have to keep sending the signals of, you know, you need to stand up for me more. I'm afraid. I'm feeling frustrated. I'm feeling hurt, which is all the emotional signals it will send if we've been treated unfairly. Now, the other thing that we also need to do, not always, it really depends, each person is completely unique. And so each person needs, you know, their own unique journey. But for some people, they need to go in and clear this trauma that is still trapped in the cells. So for example, I worked a while back with a client who was very, very severely beaten and hit and abused by his mother. And he was severely traumatized and still carrying that trauma in his cells. And that needed to be cleared because every time he would have a conversation, and even quite a mundane, innate conversation, his fear sensors were so switched on and oversensitized that everything was fearful and scary for him. So we have to go in. We have to go in and clear that fear and that trauma, which is possible to do. And we don't have to go and relive the trauma in order to do that. So we clear that trauma away, and then we're not constantly getting re-triggered into this fight, flight, freeze response.
You're listening to Full Power Living, and we'll be right back.
As a parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com.
Welcome back. We're talking today about bullying. My guest is Kim Knight, Director of the Art and Science of Well-Being, which conducts online courses and does healing around the world. Kim has been telling us about bullying, including the effects that it has on us, especially if we don't release the emotions that are stirred up after bullying and the consequences of the bullying. So what's your idea about how to release those emotions, Kim?
So there are many, many ways to release emotions, and that's quite a tough question to answer. But first of all, we have to become aware of them. Often we're simply not aware of how we're truly feeling. So we have to learn literally how to label different emotions. And, you know, for yourself or myself, we've been working in this arena for many years, and it's quite simple for us. It's become second nature. But for people who initially are, you know, not as emotionally literate, we could say, and that's not a, you know, a criticism in any way, it's just a fact. We literally people have to learn how to differentiate between anger, sadness, hurt, frustration, fear, anxiety, all these different feelings, and be able to label them so that they can recognize them or recognize them when their body generates them. And then we have to look, one of the most important things for emotions is to be able to acknowledge them and accept them without judgment, because that was precisely what didn't happen when we were younger. We did not feel unconditionally loved or unconditionally accepted for who we were. Instead, we came to believe that we were wrong for having emotions and that there was something bad or wrong about us. And we have to learn that actually emotions are not bad. Even though they may feel bad, that doesn't mean that they are bad, because just like a battery has a positive and a negative, we can have positive feeling emotions and negative feeling emotions, and neither are bad. They're just a form of feedback. So we have to learn how to recognize them, then how to acknowledge and accept them without judging us. So instead of pushing away and resisting, because what we resist persists, we have to literally open our arms and embrace our feelings. And the paradox is, when we embrace these feelings, they transform because they're energy, and this is internal alchemy. They literally transform and dissipate and dissolve and disappear, but not until we acknowledge them and recognize them.
Wow, that's really, you remind me that when I was growing up, my father used to tell me that I was overly emotional. And after years of working on myself, I realized that there's no such thing as overly emotional. All he was really telling me was that I was more emotional than he could tolerate, but I was just right emotional for me. And that was a big day when I discovered that.
Yes, and it's very common for people to be told they're overly emotional or oversensitive. And actually, no, you're right. It's just that the other person doesn't know how to deal with their emotions.
Now, one of the things, so when we're talking about getting better, first of all, you need to start setting some boundaries, and you need to start accepting your emotions and letting them start moving. But another thing has to do with the fact that a lot of people who've been bullied actually mistreat themselves. Will you talk about that? Why do people do that?
Oh, yeah, that's really interesting. Very common. I think I've been a specialist in that myself. you know, we could call it, you know, being hard on ourselves.
Right.
Or, you know, another term is, you know, our inner mean girl, if you're a girl. So what happens is we don't, as I said before, at a fundamental level, usually unconscious, we don't feel good enough. We don't have good self-esteem, good self-confidence, self-belief, self-worth, all these self-words in a healthy way. And
So as a result of that, we just continually unconsciously keep telling ourselves that. And one of the ways we do that is that we just punish ourselves. And you know, an extreme form of that is literally somebody cutting themselves. You know, that's a form of self-punishment, because it's a way of trying to either suppress the emotions or let the emotions out, but they don't know how to do that in a healthy way. So we literally punish ourselves, and we could punish ourselves by overeating, by working too hard, by not having enough fun. There are many different ways we punish ourselves. We can punish ourselves with our thoughts. For example, continuously saying things like, "Oh, you're so stupid." That was actually one of somebody in my family used to do that. So we're just very negative towards ourselves, both in our thoughts and in our actions and our inner behavior.
So then one of the things that we also need to do, you say that there are three things that need to be done. And one of them is to start making yourself a priority. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I remember many years ago, well, 20 years ago now, actually, when I was on a training. And this was when I was working through chronic fatigue and looking for answers to the chronic fatigue. And we were in this training course, and our teacher gave us this piece of paper, and it said, "My first responsibility is to myself, then to my partner, and all else follows." And I remember reading it and thinking, I don't believe that. I don't buy it. It just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel true. But I really trusted this teacher. She was a very, very evolved, self-aware person. And so I decided to hold it as a possibility that maybe this could be true. And I put it on my fridge and I said, it's going to stay there until I believe it. And you know, when you put something on a fridge, you don't notice it after a while. And it was literally on my fridge for several years. And about 7-8 years later, I suddenly noticed it again. And I read it. And it rang true. It was the truth for me. And that was because I'd done a lot of work in the interim on, you know, working on my stuff, inverted commas, and clearing the past and clearing emotions and getting myself well. And in that process, growing my self-worth and my self-esteem. And so I came to understand the truth of that statement. But initially, we don't see that. And you know, all the people that I work with, when they first come to me, it's like a real jump to believe that they can put themselves first and look after themselves and say, for example, if somebody asks them to do something, they have a right to say no.
You know, that's interesting. I've had a little puzzle. You came and stayed with us a few years back, and so you met my husband, and you know that he died this year. And in the process of his illness, I became aware that he did not, and this is something I'd never run into before, he didn't have an idea that it was up to him to take care of himself. And I'd never run into that. And I just, as you're talking, I'm wondering if, you know, if a person who doesn't realize that it's up to them to take care of themselves is really deep in that kind of not putting yourself first.
Absolutely. But again, the problem is it's all unconscious until it becomes conscious.
Wow. Well, thank you. I hadn't understood that. So I want you to just go over, what are the three things? I want you to just to briefly state them again. If you want to move yourself out of the consequences of having been bullied, what are the three primary things you need to do?
Okay, so these three primary things, and I'm not necessarily saying these are the only things, but they are three primary things for sure. We have to learn how to create boundaries around unfair treatment from other people. In other words, if people are treating us badly and that is making us feel bad and even, you know, to the point of illness, we have to put a stop to that. And we have to learn how to do that. And that is often what people need help with, because if they didn't need help, they'd already be doing it.
Right.
So that is step one, creating the boundaries. Step two is we have to learn how to feel our feelings and communicate our feelings if it's something to do with another person, and how to process our feelings and how to learn that it's okay to have feelings and that we're not bad for having feelings. And basically, we have to learn how to master our feelings. And the third thing is we have to learn how to look after ourselves and make us our number one priority. So that's like high self-care, making sure that we're always looking after ourselves on a daily basis, nutritionally, with exercise, with our thoughts, with our time management, with having enough fun, with good work-life balance, all that sort of stuff. We have to learn how to make ourselves our number one priority, because if we look after ourselves, we then have it's like our cup overflows and we can give to the world, we can give to other people. But if we're constantly depriving ourselves and punishing ourselves because unconsciously we don't feel we deserve that, then we just end up feeling very, very frustrated and building up even more frustration inside of us. And we also, we just can't contribute in the world as well as if we're looking after ourselves.
Thank you. That's really, really clear. Talk a little bit about what you do for people and include the best way for people to get hold of you if they'd like to work with you.
Well, I do work one-on-one, but less and less these days due to time. So I work with a small number of select VIP clients if they really want to work one-on-one, and that's always the fastest way to make progress. And I also have a range of online self-help home study programs. And I have a sort of a mixture of the two as well, where there'll be like a home study program, but maybe we'll have some group webinars or my membership site. So there are various ways to interact, but more on a group level. And I also speak at medical conferences, and I love traveling to speak and share, you know, this new cutting edge medical science and root cause diagnosis at medical conferences, and I also hold workshops. So there's a real variety of ways that I spread this life-changing information. And the best way to contact me is my newer website is kimknighthealth.com.
So that's KimKnight health, health.com, right?
Yeah. And I'm mostly active social media-wise on Facebook, so I do have a Facebook page, Kim Knight Art of Health, something like that.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, Kim Knight from New Zealand. I'm sure we'll find you. Wow. So, just briefly, what's a life like when someone is no longer stuck in the realm of a child who's been bullied? If you heal yourself, what's different about your life if you haven't been healed?
That's a great question. Basically, it's freedom and self-mastery. So we're no longer feeling trapped. We're no longer feeling controlled by others, but we feel a control of our life. And that is freedom.
Very good. Very good. You know, in the last year or so, I've become aware that there are people who experience no boundaries set on them at all as they're growing up. And I've observed a few of such people, and I find that they, you know, they don't hesitate to take on anything, which is wonderful, but they also don't recognize boundaries with other people. And it seems like an aberration of what we've been talking about. Like the bullying may have been that they didn't receive a container to contain themselves as they were growing up, rather than having their containers smashed. So
I totally hear what you're saying. I wouldn't classify it myself as bullying.
Uh-huh.
I don't quite know what I would come up with, but I totally get what you're saying, that there is no container and there's this complete free reign.
And, right.
Yeah,
we really need a balance, don't we?
Yes, and that's why parents are there to guide and discipline and show the lines, you know, that we operate within, and then yes, if we want to go beyond them and color outside the lines later, we can. But it's always good to have that structure, and that's why discipline, you know, healthy discipline is good.
All right, good. So give us a very short statement. What do you want people to remember from listening to this program? What do you want them to take home with them to make sure they never forget?
Well, if people are listening and they think they may be being bullied or they know they're being bullied, I just want them to know that there is absolutely a way out, that they can learn how to take their power back and not be intimidated anymore. They just have to find the right help and learn how to do that.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, like I said earlier, until I began perusing your work on bullying, I didn't really get fully how insidious and damaging it could be, especially emotionally. And I hadn't made the connection that a lot of our frustratingly difficult illnesses, like physical exhaustion and fibromyalgia, could be connected with bullying. So thank you. I've really gained an understanding that I never had before, and I'm very grateful to you for that, Kim.
Well, I'm really grateful to you as well, Eileen, for interviewing me, you know, having me on your show again, and also for your show, you know, the amazing work that you've been doing on your show, because how many years is it now?
13.
Wow. That's dedication.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I've learned a lot, too, from people such as yourself. I mean, it's somebody who was a psychic was on the program. And I talked with them after the show, and she said, there's no point in you going and getting a PhD. You earn one every 3 or 4 months doing your radio show.
Oh, it's true. Your knowledge and wealth of this topic, what you must have heard, is amazing.
Yeah, it really is. Well, thank you so much for being part of that matrix and for being on Full Power Living today, Kim. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Me too, Eileen.
All right. So next week, Gloria Dunn will be with me to discuss revivement, how to set up your life after retirement so that it's interesting, engaging, and one you want to live. I'm very interested, since I'm about to take off in my recreational vehicle at age 74. I really want to talk with Gloria on this topic. So remember to listen to us on emotionalpro.com or subscribe on iTunes, and then tune in again next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Our producer is Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media. Thank you, Paul, for your incredible efforts to help us stay on the air. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
To Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.